listening to Beyond the Pipe with Chris Morgan and Sean Ream. So I got the snip this weekend, fellas. So full on in there, doctor. The first time that I've had a male messing around with my junk, I can honestly say my whole life. The first time I had somebody down there, they take this like rubber band thing and they slip it over your cock and they pull it back, and then he does the whole procedure down there. And in the meantime, we're having a very casual conversation. It's probably something that it's an experience I've never had anywhere else before. I can honestly say that.
That'd be pretty weird for sure. What is casual conversation while you're getting worked on?
Oh man, we were talking about our families, and he was telling me about, you know, where he comes from, and then we were talking about, we even started talking about like politics briefly at one point. I was like, how do we get here? And it's a 10-minute procedure, but we had enough time to cover a lot of ground.
Wow. Yeah, you don't want politics when your piece is in someone else's hand, right? You don't want to talk about politics then.
I played it very safely. I didn't really interject too many of my deep political thoughts. You know, I didn't want to land too far on the other side of the fence from him.
Yeah, I might get a little aggressive if you went the wrong direction.
Yeah, man.
Well, everybody, welcome to the Beyond the Pipe podcast. We have a special guest today, Jedi Azuma. He is with the Rising Man Movement and the Rising Man Podcast. He's had him on here to hang out and tell us about his balls. No,
there's not much more to tell than that. That's the highlight.
Yeah. Right. Okay. All right.
Well, it's actually kind of good to know that it's such a quick procedure. I've made the decision to not go that route after listening to the conversation that you had on your podcast. I've decided that. That's just, for now, that's not the direction I want to go. I am done having kids. You know, I don't want to say fingers crossed because that just sounds so shitty to people that can't have kids. But, you know, for us, it's difficult. And, you know, having two full-time parents and then businesses involved, it's crazy, crazy. So how many kids do you have?
I've got two children. I've got a 6-year-old son and my daughter's almost three. And I totally get it, man. You know, it wasn't a decision that I just made flippantly. I was telling somebody else this story because people are always surprised. I've talked, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 people in the past 3 days since I've had it. And people always say, oh, how you doing? And first or second sentence, I'm telling people that I got a vasectomy. And then a couple of people are like, well, why are you leading off with that? I'm like, well, that's what's present for me right now. But One of the people said, you know, was that like a spontaneous decision, like getting a tattoo? And I was like, no, man, it was not that for me. I hope nobody makes that decision in passing. And to go a little bit deeper, man, it's actually a very significant decision for me because it's a part of my body that works perfectly fine. There's not an issue that I'm trying to solve, but the bigger thing that I connected to was what really is the best decision I can make for my family? Because if we were to have another child right now, it would put a huge stretch and strain on us. It would make my wife and I less present than we want to be with our kids. It didn't fit in with the bigger picture. And it was, if I looked at it that way, very pragmatically, it was just a simple solution. Now I had to grapple with the bigger parts of that decision of letting go of some things and some of the psychology around, oh, now there's a part of my body that they throw around the word sterile. And in the paperwork, it says you are agreeing to be sterilized by Dr. So-and-so. And that was really triggering. I was like, whoa, man, that sounds like I'm in a sci-fi movie now. But
well, they talk you out of it too sometimes. My friend was like, the doctor was trying to talk him out of it.
Really?
Yeah, in the clinic. And he was like, no, I'm definitely doing this. He's like, you only have one kid. Are you sure? And he thought, you know, he put on his tin hat and he was like, well, maybe they're like trying to create more people so they have more people to work on and there's more business. And I'm like, dude, you can't even get in to see a doctor if you want to for like 6 months right now. They can't handle
that. How old is your friend though? Were they asking that because maybe he's like 22?
No, man. He's my age. He had a kid and literally like a week later went and got a vasectomy. He's like, I'm done. I'm like, whoa, you know, that's a little quick to be doing it. But he had already decided he didn't want kids. And he kind of made like a deal with his wife. Like, all right, we'll have one kid. And then, you know, he's a fun time Charlie. He does not like being weighed down by.
I wonder how that's going to work out, man. I mean, it's a personal decision. It's a really important decision. I mean, having kids or not having kids, bigger picture, like a lot of people, I think we fall into these decisions without actually deciding. And so, like, obviously some of it is out of our control, but oh man, you know, my younger brother had his daughter when he was 17 years old.
Yeah.
And that's a life-changing thing right there.
Mm-hmm. At that age, dude, I wasn't even like mentally ready to have a kid until I was like 30. Mm-hmm. It's not like I was the guy that was at the bar every night, or like I was big into like dirt biking and, you know, China, or, you know, I wasn't like, I didn't have a busy lifestyle. I had a business. Mm-hmm. But we just kind of finally, I mean, I've been with my wife for 21 years since high school. Mm-hmm. So we kind of just made the decision like, now or never. I mean, time's a ticking sort of thing. Like, I could have a kid when I'm 75, but she's kind of getting to the age where, most recently, our second kid, who's about a year old now, she was a geriatric pregnancy. And when I heard those words, I was like, really? And I started thinking, I was like, damn, we're actually kind of old. Because depending on your culture, I mean, I have friends that are my age and are almost, actually one of them is a grandmother at my age.
That's crazy.
I'm like, I'm trying to do the math and carry the two and, you know, do all that in my head. I'm like, how is that? They both had kids when they were like 16.
Yeah. It's wild, man. It's wild.
It's nuts. It happens. Man. We've decided for now that one is fine. Mm-hmm. I mean, our lives are busy enough. I mean, we're both stay-at-home parents, but we run two businesses. And I mean, yeah, it'd be cool to bring another kid into that. But at the same time, like you were saying, wanting to be present, I could not imagine having to split the time that I currently have for my son with another child. I don't know that that would feel fair. I mean, maybe it's not the same context, but it wouldn't feel fair.
Well, in the arithmetic, I mean, 1 + 1 when it comes to children is actually 4. It's not 2, man. It's just that much more time and effort. But yeah, that's why I think it's really important for us to put ourselves in positions where we can make the best informed decision that we can. You know, obviously you never know what the outcome's going to be. It can go a million different ways, but I think there's a lot of people that fall into decisions unknowingly or unconsciously. And to me, that's an even bigger theme. We totally missed an opportunity here though, guys. I mean, this is Beyond the Pipes podcast, right? And there's some great jokes in there. We didn't really, let's go beyond the pipes, maybe, right?
So for those of you that don't know, the Rising Man movement and the Rising Man podcast, from the time that I've been listening to it, what I've gathered is it's about encouraging men to be better in almost every aspect of life. And Jetty's here to maybe talk a little bit about that and introduce us to what, you know, men's work is, which that's kind of a newer term for me. I didn't understand what that meant at first, but Jetty, maybe you could, how would you define men's work, and maybe a short little, you know, sentence of what you do basically?
Yeah. Well, I always like to say that the first medicine for men, the first thing that essentially cracks open everything is relatability. You know, that's why I'm so honest about my experience, to the degree that I feel comfortable talking about my vasectomy, talking about my challenges in my relationship, the things that have happened in my past that shaped me, because what I've learned over the years of being in circles, in groups, in workshops and trainings with other men is that I'm not actually as unique as I think I am. When I'm living in my own head and my own experience, I think that I'm the only one person in the world who's going through something, but it's been proven to me over and over and over again that the hardest things I've been through, the things that I hold the most shame or guilt around in my life, I'm definitely not the only one. In rooms full of 100 people, I've shared things that I've never told anyone in my life and looked around and seen half the room raising their hands. And some of those men in tears, because they're like, whoa, I didn't know that I could share that here. So that's usually where I start, because, you know, men's work and all these things that become cliche and overused, what we're really talking about is just opening up more of ourselves, more of our experiences, and giving ourselves the evidence that it doesn't mean I'm going to be bullied, doesn't mean I'm going to be ridiculed, I'm not going to be judged for it, because I'm not even the only person in this conversation who's gone through that. So if I try to boil it down, to me, it's really just having greater access to what I'm experiencing in a way that makes it so it doesn't have power over me. I've had guys share stories of sexual abuse, you know, being abused by family members as children, that they're like, I never told anybody because I was worried about XYZ. But the lightness that comes from being able to air that out is remarkable. I don't know if you guys have had much experience with that or if you've had a similar thing, but just that relatability piece is really the cornerstone of it.
I mean, I know people that have been in that position, and I've recently, Sean and me and actually another guy have recently started discussing, and we're spread out. I'm in California. I'm actually half hour from you.
Yeah.
And then, I didn't know if that was, that's not top secret, right?
Santa Cruz, yeah. California, baby.
Yeah. All right. And Sean's up in Montana, in, northwestern Montana, and the other one's in Australia, as a matter of fact. So what this has given us, at least, you know, I look into it as I've always done. So I've always done this internet, you know, talking, Skype, Zoom, all that kind of stuff. But what we've gotten recently, even with everyone doing Zoom, is this second layer of tribe, right? So I kind of source my stuff from a lot of different guys. Like, they, you know, obviously there's Liver King, who's awesome with, you know, he's got one way of doing things. Then you've got like the more, I don't want to say religious, because it's not religious. It's almost a tribal sense of like Jack Donovan, mm-hmm. you know, and things are very specific and rooted in ritual. And I love that, because that's pipe smoking, man. That's ritual, right? Mm-hmm. And then yours is more of like I would liken you to like more of like a free, balanced vibration, you know, kind of thing. And that actually, it comes out a lot when you talk, because it's a very well-rounded way to present yourself. Like, no one's ever going to accuse you of being a chauvinist, because you operate on the other side too, mm-hmm. right? So you're, you know, honoring your wife's femininity, and you're helping, you know, other guys who have, you know, possible weaknesses or they're struggling with things, which you may not find in a lot of other categories of the manosphere, if I can mm-hmm. use that term.
I like that one, manosphere. Haven't heard that one yet.
Well, that's actually a thing. That's like the 21 convention, George Bruno, Jack Donovan does it. There's a few other guys that I don't follow directly, so I feel bad if they're listening. Sorry, I forgot about you. But, there's tenets, you know, or tenets. I forget how you say it, but you know, there's like, the way Liver King puts it out there. He's like, there's cold, there's fuel, there's, you know, I forget all of them. Sorry. He's not going to listen to this anyway. He's too big. But there's things that like Sean, me and the other guy, don't want to mention his name, 'cause he's pretty private about stuff, but, we have kind of started doing together. Right. Mm-hmm. Sean still needs to get his lazy ass out of the shop and start working out again, but I don't blame him, 'cause it's like 5 degrees outside. So I get it. But you know, like for me, I get up, I go, and I'm literally like wearing just shorts, and I go out and I stand in the sun and I ground my lawn, and I have my tea. Usually it's, you know, I've got my mug here. It's motherfucking tea time. And it's just a thing I've been doing. It's like a ritual that I do every morning. And then I work out, I do an ice cold shower, and then I do Wim Hof breath work. Do it every single day. It's become, you know, what I do. And it's created a calm in my life and sort of a centered, like a masculine energy and a power that this is what I do every day. And then the rest of my day, I'm a better guy because of that.
Yeah.
And so we see, you know, I'm talking to a lot of guys, but we see eye to eye on this, and they're realizing that, I'm sorry for going on a tangent here, but in the current, let's just say the past probably 40 years, 50 years, the allowance of men being masculine and that being a good thing overall has been just completely shit on. You know, if you're masculine, then, well, maybe that's toxic, or maybe that's aggressive, and maybe, you know, don't do violent sports, because you might hurt someone. And in that same sense, now you got guys like you, Jordan Peterson is specifically comes to mind. Being a man, you should be a monster. Like, you should be an absolute monster, but then control it. And that makes you the best.
I think that's what makes you valuable to your family and to your community. And It's challenging in a time and age where there's so many people who can air out their opinion because things get misconstrued, and we're trying to capture the nuance of this conversation in, you know, how many characters do they allow on Twitter on Twitter these days? You know, it's just not possible. You know, it's not possible to look at it that to make it that simple.
I think social media has just destroyed any chance of all that. You know, yeah.
Totally. Well, and that's the thing.
Any chance a real conversation.
We try to put people in one category or the next, and the reality is it's not even fair. One of the things I want to respond to that you were saying, Chris, was you're talking about something that men have always done. I believe is men thrive on ritual, right? We thrive on ritual, whether it's smoking a pipe or going for your morning walk. You know, my dad goes golfing once a week, and he's done that since before I was born. You know, like there's just things that guys do that keep us regimented. Call it a masculine thing, call it a guy thing. I think that's something we've always done. Now, there's also rituals that men have shared together, but that's where I think it's a little bit more, okay, well, what kind of rituals have men been sharing, and what are we accomplishing in those rituals? I say this without any judgment, but the ritual of, you know, grabbing a beer and watching the game, or going wherever that guys go to together, what is the depth that's achieved through that kind of ritual? I know for myself, you know, back when I was doing those rituals of, you know, going to the bars or getting high with my friends, there was a certain boundary that never really got crossed. There were certain things we never really dove into. And what I was alluding to earlier is that there's so much more depth to our experience. And I think a lot of people who have resistance to what people are calling men's work think that it is airing out your feelings and becoming just a really soft, mushy version of yourself. But honestly, man, I've been in rooms with some of the hardest guys I've ever met, like literally Navy SEAL, special ops kind of guys who are breaking down when they're sharing stories of what happened to them in their childhood. And then talking about how much lighter and free that they feel now that they're not the only person holding on to that. So I think it's a really valuable conversation to have, because people either think that this older version of masculinity that's become toxic now is all wrong, or there's people who think that we had it right and now we're washing it down with all these feelings and emotions that are making guys soft and useless in society. And I just don't think it's either of those things.
I don't think so either. I feel like it's been malfocused almost. See, I was actually reflecting on this a couple of weeks ago when I was listening to a Jordan Peterson podcast, and he started crying. Mm. He actually started crying in the podcast. And he does this quite frequently, even when he's reading the 12 rules to life. He actually starts crying when he's narrating his own book on Audible. And it's like, I've never heard that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm like,
he cried on Joe Rogan for the same.
He cried on. Yeah. A couple of times. And the thing is, like, Jordan Peterson, I would not, if you saw him and you were speaking to him, you would not say that's a guy. You know what I mean? Like, that's a man's man. 'Cause he's not, he's an intellectual. He's a freaking genius, first off, but he is an effeminate man. Like some of his, the way he talks, you know, his mannerisms would be considered traditionally effeminate, but he speaks in a way that supports men in almost a strange way. He's and not everyone likes him. I get that, but it's just such a strange irony that someone that is coming from that background and then saying, like, you should be a monster, but you should control it. And you know, women have their things that they're good at, but he mainly talks about men. And I think going back to the thing, maybe we had it right. We messed that up at some point. I don't know, man, because I mean, I talked to my grandma a lot about how my grandpa was when he was younger, you know, like in his 20s and 30s, like he's a World War II vet. He did what every other guy at the time did. He went and worked his ass off for, you know, 10 hours a day or 12 hours a day. I went straight to the bar, got drunk, came home. He was usually an asshole, but not like violent, just like kind of not a pleasant person to be around all the time. And then he went to bed and rinse and repeat. And then on the weekends, maybe he spent some time with his kids, but more than likely he would be out working on, he built homes. So, and he owned them. So he was working on those. It's like, well, is that the dad that you would want? You know, guy is asking themselves now, do you like asking your wife, do you want me to be like my grandpa was? Do you want me to be like my dad was? My dad was a workaholic. He was working all the time. my great grandfather was a musician and he was probably a really sweet guy, but they were broke, like stupid broke. So it's like, what version of man in my lineage would you want?
Yeah.
Finding that balance is hard.
And that's where I think, because you said, you know, asking your wife, like, what version of the man do you want? I think before there is even a wife or a family or anyone in the picture, that's the question that I got to ask myself.
That's like, a good
point. Who am I happy to be in this world?
Yeah.
And the, you know, kind of the two sides of the spectrum that I drew up before, that side that's resisting to change and thinks that we should just repeat the past and that was actually the right way to do things, we're just destined to do the same things that, like you said, our fathers, our grandfathers did. And most of the time, I find that those are guys who never really asked themselves the question, well, who's the man that I want to be? Or didn't expose themselves to enough possibilities of what manhood actually looks like. Because on my podcast, you guys have listened to a couple of them. You know, I always ask, well, what does it mean to be a man? Originally, I used to ask the question, what's the difference between a boy and a man? And I saw that there was a lot of overlap from people who would come in and say similar things. But when you ask somebody, what does it really mean to be a man to you? What does that really look like for you? There's some discrepancies there. You know, we have different.
It's going to be different.
Yeah. You talk to, you could pick two different people and who's right, right? Who's right in their definition of what manhood is. So I think that's actually something that everyone needs to decide for themselves before you make.
Well, it takes all kinds. I mean, we all can have a different view on that. And that's kind of what makes societies work, really. I mean, if everybody was the same exact cookie cutter, you know, picture of a man, there wouldn't be innovation. There wouldn't be creativity. There wouldn't be art. There wouldn't be pipe makers like us. Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's the thing though, is when you do present this conversation to society, everyone has their idea of what they want to see in men and in women, right? I mean, we're just focusing the conversation on men right now, but society does the same thing for women. We all have our different ideas of what a woman should look like in society. Or I've got my ideas of what I think is a woman who's ready to be a mother, who's, you know, the type of woman that I'm looking for. And that matches the partner that I chose, but that doesn't make that the one right tried and true way. But that's the bigger conversation that's happening on social media, is everyone's trying to nail down what is the right version of manhood, of masculinity. And I just don't think it's that simple.
I don't think it needs to be. It, you know, to a certain extent, that's kind of an interesting thing that I've never really thought about, because you might find, you know, there are some female dominated relationships, there's some male dominated relationships, and they actually are very happy. Both sides of that, both parties are happy with that. Like, I know a lot of guys that are just, they're like one of them is an artist and his wife makes like a crap ton of money, more than he could ever dream to, just because she's particularly good at her job. Now it's her job happens to be within a male dominated industry, but she does very well. So he focuses on his art. He makes sure that the house is clean. He, you know, cooks dinner and stuff like that. And to most guys, they'd be like, shame on you. You know, how dare you do that? That, don't you feel terrible about yourself? And he's like, he's happy. Like, he has a great, healthy relationship. I mean, I'm not going to say that his wife's out there, you know, wearing leather and she's, you know, coming home and spanking him or anything. It's a normal dynamic sexually, but when it comes down to, you know, there are some people that we know that are, I mean, if you described them to someone, you'd be like, so which one is the man and which one's a woman? Biologically, they're male and female. Their duties seem otherwise, the way that they handle things.
Yeah. Well, and again, that goes back to the conversation of, well, who's right? You know, if I'm making somebody wrong for that, what's my motivation behind it? I think if you really sat your buddy down and you created a space where it's like, hey man, listen, it's just between you and me, confidentiality, just are you really happy? Are you really happy with the dynamics of this playing out? And he's gone through all of those levels and layers. Cause I've seen guys like that too, who are in a similar situation and they appear to be happy. They put off the persona in public that they're happy. And then you get down to it and there's a part of them that they feel like they gave up. So you never know what's under the surface. I guess that's one point, is you never really know what's under the surface, but if somebody is genuinely happy and they say, dude, I like the way that my life is, for me, my vision for my life and my family is just to be here and play my role in making sure that my kids were raised in a good way. I don't care who's making the money here, as long as we're providing what we need for them, like, I'm good. Then what's wrong with that? That's his version of the man that he wants to be.
Yeah. You know? How did you get into this, Jetty? I mean, tell us the origin story.
Yeah, well, I guess the simple origin story is that in my early 20s, I was freshly graduated, had a doctorate in physical therapy. I was making a good salary working in Midtown Manhattan. And, you know, really on paper, everything was good. Had a great community of friends, you know, plenty of money to pay my bills, having fun. But I was just like completely confused and empty. And I remember my first day of work, I was literally shaking at lunchtime because I couldn't imagine doing the same thing for the next 25 years. And up until that point, that was going back to the examples of what it meant to be a man. That's what I watched my dad do. I was like, damn, is this what it means? Is like going in and clocking in at something that I'm good at and I kind of enjoy it, but I can't see myself doing this for the rest of my life. What do I do now? And I looked around and there was nobody else to give me a different example of what being a man looked like. And I was like, fuck. And so I was in a space where I was just numbing myself out. I was smoking weed. I was in like a perpetually high state for about 3 years, just smoking tons of weed and just really checking out of life. And I couldn't picture my life past a certain point. So someday I had a really big wake up call. I got arrested for smoking weed in public in New York City. And at the same time, I talk about it. It's a funny story now, but I had just come home from my older brother's wedding, where I was one of the not groomsmen, but one I was one of the best men. Me and my younger brother, and he gave both of us like a souvenir knife as a gift. And so I was like, oh, this is amazing. You know, my older brother gave this to me. So I just like, you know, tucked it in my pocket, went home, smoked up a J in Union Square on the way home, got pulled aside by an undercover. And it's one thing to be smoking weed in public. It's another thing to be carrying a knife and having like a really, you know, kind of unusual story about it. So I spent a night in jail after I never even had detention in my whole life, dude. I was like the straight A student. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing in here with these guys? And it just kind of woke me up and snapped me into, okay, I need to take a look at the way I'm doing my life. Cause the way I'm making decisions, it's not really carrying me anywhere. I could keep doing this for however long I want to, but there's got to be more to it. So I quit my job, traveled for 4 months on the road with a backpack, had all these amazing experiences. And one thing I wanted to do was find a community of men, like a circle of men, elder guys that could just give me some new perspective on what being a man looks like. That was it. And I really don't know why that awareness came into my mind, but it was just there. And sure enough, when I made it to the West Coast, found a men's team that was operating, guys twice my age that were doing the types of stuff that I've mentioned here in a way that I'd never seen before. I was like, what the hell are you guys doing? You know, asking each other really penetrating questions, like, you know, about their life and about the decisions that they're making in their relationships. It was uncomfortable to witness, but there was something to it. There was like going way beneath the surface of the conversations I was used to having about life that just, and I got hooked. And I went and showed up with these guys every other week. We had a meeting for 3 hours and I still meet with those guys today. Been meeting with those guys for almost 10 years now. Wow. And it just revealed to me that there's so much more to talk about and to operate at a higher level and have clarity in my life. And I started looking around me and my buddies were like, what are you doing, man? Cause there's something you're doing that we didn't used to do. And I realized, wow, there's a lot of guys my age who don't even know that this exists, that it's even a possibility. I started the podcast back when I literally could only find 15 other podcasts that were designed specifically for men. 15. Now I don't even know, man. There's probably hundreds of them now.
Oh yeah.
But back then that's all there was. So I'm glad to see that, but really this conversation is still very new.
So I was going to ask you about brotherhood. I mean, you said that you met a group of guys that were twice your age that you learned from. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed in your podcast, you guys talk a lot about brotherhood, and on your site, I mean, there's on risingman.org for those who want to check it out. You got some programs, the Inferno, Father to Father, Ignite, Dads on Purpose, Fire Circles. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about those, because pipe smoking, and not just for men, obviously, but we have some awesome women pipe smokers too, but there is a brotherhood to it. And there's groups of people that, I mean, on Facebook and Instagram and all that, but traditionally you go down to the local smoke shop and sit around and have a cigar or have a pipe and it's like the barber shop. That's where you get your gossip. That's where you connect with other people that are like-minded. So how does that play a role in what you guys teach? Like, you know, not just individually what you're doing, but as a group, what are you doing as well?
That's a great question, man. You know, one of the things I say often on the podcast or anywhere I'm sharing content is that I wasn't the guy in my 20s who was investing all my money in real estate opportunities or my 401k. You know, I wasn't going that route. I invested in relationships, and those relationships have paid off in massive dividends over the years, to the point where I realized that that's the greatest currency that there is on this planet. Is what we invest in our relationships to build trust, and the way that we build trust, the depth of trust that we build. I even equate it to a bank account. Like trust is the most valuable currency on this planet. And what the one way that you generate more trust currency is by showing up and doing what you said you were going to do for people, and having people do the same for you. So when you ask me a question about brotherhood, what is brotherhood? With words like community and tribe and all these things being thrown around these days on social media, for me, family has taken on a whole new meaning. There's my family, my biological family that I grew up with. And then there's the people that I consider family who I know without a doubt I could depend on. Those few people that I know, if things could go any number of directions, right, in this uncertain world we live in. And I know that with these people, I would be able to figure it out. I'd be able to navigate something, that they would show up for me. And I've had enough experiences with these folks that, you know, we show up for each other. And so brotherhood for me is having those relationships that are at that level, where I think about you and I care about you after we go our separate ways and we stop having a conversation. Right? I think about like that challenge you shared with me. I'm like, I'm wondering about that. In fact, I'll pick up the phone and I'll call you a few days later and say, hey man, how's that thing going? That thing that you shared the other night when we were sitting down and smoking a cigar together, right? It's like, has the relationship transcended that point where I actually care? I'm invested in your life just as much as you are, beyond the boundaries of that thing that we share together. To me, that's like a simple way I think that's relatable for guys, in whatever way that you share time with other men. Do you actually care about those people? Like to the point where if they were going through a hard time in their life, would you want to show up for them? Would you want to be there? Could you count on them to be there for you as well? When you go through the hardest things in life, you lose a loved one, right? You find out that your kid has a terminal illness, right? Or you lose your job and you don't know how you're going to make a rent. Do you have somebody in your life that you can depend on for that? To me, that's the benchmark that I'm aiming for in my relationships that I put in that category of brotherhood.
Yeah. Like super high vibration type stuff. That's something actually that I've noticed too. When I've started investing more energy into relationships with people that I genuinely do think about when I'm not talking to them, even though I'm talking to these guys like all the time, we have the whole Voxer thing going throughout the whole day. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But then when you start doing that, you're like, oh, you know, I thought of something, this would be great for him. Or I saw something like, dude, you need to read this because it pertains to that particular thing that you mentioned to me. You start thinking about your friends the way you think about like grandma. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I got to call her up and make sure she's all right, or, you know, whatever. But when you do that, all the stuff you're doing before, and you probably noticed this, you know, with that group of friends that you were hanging with and you were smoking weed with and you're doing stuff that like frivolous activity that was fun and relaxing and worthwhile time, but you start realizing like, this is like eating gummy bears when I should be eating like a chicken sandwich, you know, like this is crap that I'm putting in and it's good, but is it good for me? Is it building something better? You start noticing those things falling away, like very organically. Mm-hmm. Like there are people that I have stopped talking to completely, like not ghosted them, but just like, I'm kind of done. Like I'm done talking to this person because they're toxic. Mm-hmm. Or I'm done
it's
talking
too much negativity.
The negativity is something that I've been really keen on lately. Like I've been noticing what in my life is toxic, and it's all come from this like beginning of like, I feel a little flabby, I need to work out. Well, that's not enough. I need to start doing the Wim Hof stuff. I need to train my mind. So I'm gonna start doing the cold. You know, I should really start reading books. Like at this point, I think I'm up to like 6 books so far this year, which is, I mean, that's more books than I read in high school probably. And you become addicted to the mastery. You know, that's one of the tenets that Jack Donovan talks about, is mastery. And there's too many people that I don't think understand that. Like they don't understand that, like, yes, I have a job. I get up, I do my job. I'll throw 30 minutes at the gym and I go home and then I'm going to have like, you know, a 6-pack and I'm going to go to bed. And you can still do those things, but if you're not spending that 5, you know, you do your 9 to 5 and you're not spending that 5 to 11 or 5 to midnight on something else that's worthwhile, even if it's like an hour a night, learning to do something you didn't know how to do before and creating that mastery in your life. I feel like you're kind of doing like, whoops. I don't know why Siri jumped up on me.
Yeah, something to say. She's trying to chime in.
Yeah. But you're misdirecting yourself in a way, you know, shooting yourself in the foot. Like, I know that's a Gary V thing, you know, the five.
Plus just not moving forward.
Well, and the most important question that you got to be asking yourself is for the sake of what, right? Because if who am I to judge a guy who goes and works 9 to 5 and comes home and throws on the TV, and if it's all for the sake of just being able to provide enough for his family so that they can get by, then who am I to judge the volume of that man's purpose? But that's why the honesty of these conversations is so important. When you really ask that's somebody, true. But is that,
everybody's got different goals.
Yeah. Like, is that really enough for you? You know, or when you look back on things, are you going to regret that you didn't put more time and energy into it? Is there actually a bigger fear or a doubt that you have that you don't feel comfortable talking about that's keeping you from aiming higher? I mean, I've had thousands of conversations with guys, and there's always something more. When you get down and ask them the question, here's one for everybody, right? When was the last time you asked yourself, what do I really want? Not what should you want? Not what do you want because your partner thinks it's a good idea for you or because your buddies tell you that you should want it. But if you clear everyone else's voice out of the room for a second, you just look yourself in the mirror and you ask yourself, what do I want? What's the answer? What's the answer to that? And what's genuinely the answer? Because if it's all I want is to go to work and then come home and clock out and, you know, see my kids graduate high school and then, you know, retire and play golf all day. There's nothing wrong with that if that's really what you're aiming your arrow at. But I don't think that most people in that situation, that's actually the answer to the question. If you really were a fly on the wall when they're having that honest conversation with themselves, I don't think it is.
I think that answer could be a lot simpler than a lot of people think too, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like it could be something very basic that doesn't happen. Like for instance, me, I'm very busy all the time. And maybe I just need to go fishing and that's all I want to do.
Yeah. You do. I start prioritizing that. This guy lives next to the largest body of fresh water west of the Mississippi. Like literally, like he can walk to it and he doesn't go fishing. I was like, dude, I'd be on that lake like 24/7.
Yeah. See, that's interesting.
I got other priorities right now.
Shit, and then meanwhile,
I'm too like type A though. Like I've got to be, if I'm not doing something that's moving myself forward with what I've decided that is, then I feel complacent. I feel like I don't just sit still. I'm always cleaning something. I'm always moving around. I'm always organizing something. I'm always making something.
Are you an all or nothing kind of guy?
I have a very hard time. Am I an all or nothing kind of guy? What do you mean by that?
Like if you're going to put yourself into a project, you'd say, all right, I'm going to go all out. Like I'm going to give everything I got to
deep.
It. Yeah. Or if I can't be fishing every day, then I'm just not going to do it because I'm not going to be the best fisherman.
All or nothing. I would say I'm very good at recognizing if it's not going to be worth my time in the end.
Well, how do you decide that? How do you decide if it's not worth your time? Like with fishing,
well, I guess,
right? How do you decide that fishing's not worth your time?
Yeah, no, it probably is.
And you got a good buddy here in Chris because he just, you know, obviously we're doing a podcast here, but he that was a poke right there, right? He just called you on your bullshit. And that's what that's one of the best things tomorrow. We can do. Well, see, that's one of the best things we do for each other as men, is call each other on our bullshit, right? I mean, you were talking about with my buddies who I was smoking weed with back when I was in my 20s. We were giving ourselves a hall pass everywhere in life, right? Like, oh, don't worry about it, man. Yeah, let's just go get high. Oh, come on. Yeah, don't worry about that relationship, dude. We give ourselves those excuses. But to me, people that I hold highly in my life are the ones who will call me on my bullshit. The guys that I want to say, you know, fuck you, man. What are you coming at me for? And then remember that, oh, you're doing that because you care about me.
Yeah. No, that's, we do that to each other all the time.
There you go.
And I mean, it comes from a good place too, because I've had people call me on certain bullshit that has been, I would say, chronic in my life forever. And I'm just like, you know, shut up. Like, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. But with very specific things, I'll kind of sit there and I'll reflect on it and be like, Yeah, you're totally right. I need to work on that. And they don't care. I mean, Sean doesn't care. He calls me on my bullshit. He's like, yo. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I get what you're saying. You know, like, that's good to do. What I was going to say to Sean was like, while you have a lake right by your house that you could totally go fishing in every day, I have things here that you would love to do that I don't even think about where I am. Like, I can, for instance, go get any ethnicity of food right now within 20 minutes. Anything. Literally, I could get Samoan food. There's Jamaican food here, like stuff that Sean doesn't even have in like a main city where he lives, you know? And I just don't even care. I'm like, I'll just get a burger, I guess, you know? So it's all dependent on like grass is always greener, that kind of stuff too. God, that's such a good point though. Calling each other. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, because it's a matter of values too, right? I mean, that's a deeper part of going back to what you asked me about men's work is taking the time to really get clear. Well, what do I value? What are the things that I'm willing to prioritize and make non-negotiable? There's some things that we talk about in these spaces. Like you see a lot of guys, I've met a lot of guys and I've been one of the guys who has sold out the things that really matter to me, right? And I don't know if this is the case for you, Sean, but I know there's a lot of guys I know who will sell out the things that actually matter to us, the things that are like the essential part of who I am as a man for something else if I'm not willing to make it that important enough. And the consequences of that are massive. And really the only outcome is resentment. I'm either going to resent myself, like, damn, why didn't I prioritize that thing? Oh, why didn't I make more time for that thing I really care about? Or I start resenting anyone and everything that I see getting in the way of me in that thing. Or I start resenting my family, start resenting my partner and putting blame everywhere else but upon myself. And at the end of the day, it's just because I didn't really honor the thing that I cared about. So values, vision. Did you guys read David Data's Way of the Superior Man? Is that something that's made its way into your...
Not yet, no.
Good one, man. It was the first book on this kind of stuff that I ever picked up. First time I picked it up, I was 21 and I wasn't ready for it. I stopped at chapter 7. In chapter 7,
what was the name of that?
The Way of the Superior Man by David Data. Yeah, it's one of those books that when you get into this stuff, it's one of like the, you know, premier books that people will suggest. A lot of people have read it. In chapter 7, he says, a man must make his mission more important than everything else in his life, including his partner and his children. When I first read that, I was like, that's backwards, dude. That's my dad's story. That was my dad going to work every day, me not seeing him, my story about him not showing up and being the coach on my baseball team. And as I've gotten older, I started to see, oh, I understand. It's not that I'm going to ignore or neglect my family. It's that there's something higher that drives me that goes above and beyond my family, but it makes me the man that my wife loves and respects. And it makes me the man that my children will follow and respect. But when I sell that out, when I sell out that part of me that is core to my mission, core to my values, I'm no longer that person. And the consequences are actually, they're insidious, but they're pretty severe.
Very severe. Yeah. I've noticed actually just happened this week, with me in particular. You know, again, Peterson, in the book, I think the very last chapter, I'm almost done with the 12 rules, to life, 12 rules for life. I forget which way it goes, but, he says that the man's job, or I guess in this current situation, the one that identifies as the male of the relationship, their job is to take care of like the breadwinner, is to take care of the spouse and the kids, but in a direct way, the kids, right? You can have one-on-one time with the kids, but in this weird indirect way, you are that umbrella. You're the protector, you're the, you know, dome, whatever you want to put it, however you want to put it. And then the mom's job or the wife's job is to take care of the children. And if you have that dynamic, it actually works perfectly. But when you have the man not taking care of themselves, they can't do any of that other crap. So, you know, in my life, like my dad drank a lot. And he was always relatively good at taking care of our family. But as the days went on, it got less and less, you know, his capabilities kind of just shrank. And I've noticed with myself, I have put rules into my life because of that, you know, and things that I do. So like I said, my morning workout thing, I do that. And that's like a non-negotiable thing. And my wife sometimes hates it. She's like, well, you know, I really need you to do. Nope. That is what I do. I do it every day. If I choose to have a rest day, if I'm hurting or I got injured or something, then that's the, you know, exception. But before anything happens that day, that is what I do. And that's not going to change. That's not like if there's an emergency, yes, I'll take care of that. But like, if you're like, hey, we're going to have brunch with the neighbors. What time is it? Oh, it's at like 8, 9 o'clock, whatever. No, we're not. You guys can go, but I'm doing this because if I do this, I'm able to provide. I'm able to take care of you guys. I'm able to be strong, mentally focused. My daughters see me doing this. In fact, my daughter now does it with me on Tuesdays because I have them in the morning while my wife works. We put, you know, my youngest down for a nap and I'm like, let's go work out.
Well, see, that's important right there, right? Even in the shifting times of your family and your responsibilities, you still make that a priority. You're like, all right, well, it's going to happen. If I got to do it with my daughter, then I'm going to enroll her in that. Right. It's when the moment that you say, oh, you know what? I'm not going to do my morning practice anymore. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it's like your wife would probably look at you funny. Right. At one point, my wife was kicking me out the door to go to my men's team meeting. Right. She's like, no, go. Cause I know the benefits that it helps all of us. It makes everything in our family work better to the point where I'm sure your wife, some days it's inconvenient. Right. So my wife still pushes up against it. Sometimes like every time I see it in her face and I remind her, hey, it's Tuesday. I got my meeting. In fact, I got a meeting tonight. And I told her this morning, I could see in her face. She's like, oh, that means that I'm by myself tonight. Like I'm cooking dinner and I'm putting the kids down. But she also knows that it's what takes care of me in that way that you were referring to.
I think in a way, and it's a hard conversation to have, and I'm just speaking in traditional, you know, relationships. It's a hard conversation to have with a woman because when I say like, I have hobbies, I'm sure you have hobbies. Sean definitely has hobbies. We have things that we do that are relatively meaningless to everyone else, but like we like doing them because it's something we like. We're dudes and we like to, you know, fuck around with tools, or maybe you like cars, or maybe you like baseball cards or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Women by and large, and I'm going to say this, it's going to piss people off. Women by and large do not innately have hobbies. It's a really strange thing. And I've looked this up. I've researched the hell out of it. I don't know, other than maybe Rachel's wife, I don't know any women that have hobbies. Their hobby, if you say, hey, what's your hobby? They're like, well, I like traveling, or I like going and hanging out with my girls, or I like hanging out with my family. And that really spells out what kind of the dynamic is there. Women interact with people, men interact with things.
Well, I think it goes, and this is something that I think is a really cool conversation. Because I also orient a lot of my belief system around nature, and this world that we live in now is it's literally like this much on the spectrum of human history. So, I think that there are biological difference between people who are born genetically male or female. And there is a reason behind that, right? There's a reason that men have, generally speaking, more, you know, stronger bodies, greater muscle density, you know, capacity to endure certain physical things, right? Whatever you want to draw up the characteristics to be, because that it served a purpose for the majority of human existence in our timeline. Now we live in a world where we don't have to go to hunt. You go and hunt at the grocery store, right? So we don't have to protect ourselves from our families, but we don't have to protect our families in the same ways we used to. So a lot of these traditional roles that we were genetically, biologically engineered for are not as important. But people who subscribe to this belief system, there's a woman named Alison Armstrong who does some incredible work on the development of men and women, and other people who've really looked into this. There's certain qualities and characteristics that you just tend to find in men or in women. And she says, Alison says, that one of the things that men consistently are based off of is a code of honor. It's so ingrained in the way that we did things for generation after generation, men who are going out hunting, or brothers in arms who are going into battle together, the warriors of the tribe. Like this is, we had to be able to trust each other, and there had to be a code of something that bonded us, because when it was life or death, you needed to depend on that. Whereas women have a different set of qualities and characteristics and skill sets that makes them effective. They even verbal communication, right? They talk about how shitty guys are at talking about how we feel and translating it. It's because when we were hunting, you weren't talking. Right. It was body language. It was instincts. It was things that we were connecting on a different plane, where while women were in the village and they were talking about the right color berries to eat. And then maybe there was like a snake in the grass. You know, there's fundamental differences. And so she says that men have this code of honor that women don't have, which is something that usually pisses women off because they see it's like, well, we men have something that we don't. But when you really boil it down, there's something that men operate off of. And I think it's honor and mastery. Going back to that word you said before, the hobby thing, there's the sense of honor, there's mastery, there's developing a skill set that we are so good at that makes us really effective to and useful for our, and valuable to our families, that I think men have just been doing for hundreds of thousands of years. It's what we're engineered to do. And now we live in a world where that doesn't make sense anymore because, well, why? Why do you have to go fishing, you know, 5 times a week? You can just go buy a fish from the store. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know?
But you do notice though, like men specifically being able to pair up or not pair up. And it's very simple. It's a simple process. Like most guys will meet each other and be like, I don't like that fucking guy. Mm-hmm. Or be like, dude, this guy is my bro. And we're going to go, you know, jump off a cliff into a river together. You know what I mean? Like it's an immediate thing. Like it's very, you might dislike someone for a very simple reason, but then you're like further in the conversation, maybe a couple minutes later, you're like, dude, this guy's awesome. And most people, this is a common thing. Most guys can tell whether they like another male within like the first 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it usually stays that way. It's instincts. And you have to be that way because, dude, you're my battle partner. You're my hunting buddy. I need you to be able to run as fast as I can. I need to make sure that you can hop on top of this freaking, you know, deer and dispatch it quickly. And we got to cut this thing up and field dress and get the hell out of here because there's bears around here. Like that's that trust level. Whereas, and like you said, with women, dude, I mean, I'm going to out all women here. All of the people that are your friends bitch about you behind your back. Almost all of them. Totally. They do that all the time.
Because it's all talk and no instinct. You know, it's like the difference between men and women. Like you were saying, men are out there hunting, using their instincts and feeling what's going on. And women are talking about, you know, you said berries. Yeah. Well, you can, as a guy, you can go to like a family gathering or whatever and not know anybody. And chances are you're probably going to like make friends with some other dude or a couple in a couple minutes. But because women don't operate like that, they have to talk it out. So what does that mean? They're going to hear gossip. Well, what do you think about this chick? No, we don't want to be friends with her. When in reality, guys are like, hey, we got the same cargo shorts. Fuck yeah. It's just a lot simpler.
This is an important part of the conversation we haven't gotten to yet, fellas, is the how we deal with emotions, right? Because there's a fundamental difference to how men and women typically deal with emotions. Painting broad strokes here, right? Obviously, because everyone can, you know, kind of be a little bit different, but generally speaking, women process emotions through talking, right? I mean, how many guys out there you've sat down with your partner and she's talking, you're like, what are we doing here? Just get to the point. What they're doing is they're processing out emotions the way that they know how. Whereas as men, you know, I think of sports a lot, right? Cause I've been an athlete my whole life. I think of like LeBron James hitting the game winning shot and he's just like beating his chest and like roaring on the table. And everybody's celebrating that because he's expressing how he's feeling, right? Like he's like fired up. He's like pumped. But where else is it acceptable for men to do that these days? For me to express that level of excitement or anger and frustration the way that I'm experiencing. Yeah. I can listen to my wife talk about how angry she is with her mom all day long, and that will be fine. It doesn't go above anybody's sensory level of danger. But as soon as I go out in the middle of the street and I start beating my chest because I'm like angry and frustrated, dude, I'm in cuffs.
you're someone's calling the cops. And it actually brought up a funny thing the other day about Planet Fitness. You know, go into Planet Fitness and it's like, okay, there's dudes lifting heavy shit in here. You can't grunt. Like, wait, why can't you grunt? That's a healthy thing. You're supposed to. I mean, different disciplines have a different word for it, but you know, you key op or whatever, you express that energy because if you don't, you might have like a freaking aneurysm or something. My background was in martial arts when I was younger. And I thought about recently getting back into it because that's also a fraternal type thing, you know, getting into, you know, rolling or getting into, you know, kickboxing or whatever. But I'm sorry, back to your point. I wanted to peel that off, the beating of the chest. That's something that we have to do. It's There's aggression.
And I think and there's definitely a line where it's like excessive. Like I've been in the gym my whole life, right? And I know there's guys in there who are like,
That's ridiculous.
Like, it's like, come on, man, what are you trying to do here? It's like, who are you trying to impress? And obviously it's a subjective thing. But yeah, I mean, the bottom line is that there's a mode of expression that we've deemed to be dangerous or unacceptable in our society that is limiting. Right. And the reality is that it's turning men into headlines, because all of a sudden now we're containing, instead of becoming people who are capable of expressing ourselves, we're containing more and holding it in. And I mean, how many times do we have to read the paper and see the nicest guy in the world took a shotgun and blew his whole family away, including himself? Yeah. Like, what? Like that should not be happening, because life is hard enough, man. I mean, we're all family men on here, right? And I'm sure there's other family men who are going to be listening. It's hard damn work to raise a family in this day and age. Like it's a really confusing time. Things are moving fast. And if we don't have those outlets to express ourselves, I'm not saying that we should become these really squishy, you know, not guys who aren't up to anything, because all we're doing is getting in our feelings about stuff. But if we don't have space to release some of the pressure, I mean, that's why men are leading in every major health category that doesn't involve breasts or female reproductive organs. Look it up. Right?
Yeah.
Heart disease, death by depression, stroke, homelessness, substance abuse and use, suicide, man, suicide. 89% of suicides, men. 99.however many percent of mass shootings, men. There's something to it. There's something to it, but most people don't want to look at that stuff. They want to just contain it and make it safe for society.
We used to fight. That's, I mean, honestly, it goes back to that. Like I have a lot of, you know, silly harebrained ideas that I bring up on the podcast. Like we should totally, and I mean that, and I want to hear your opinion on this. We need to bring back duels.
Fight Club.
Like if you have an actual thing that you want to bring to the table and you say, fuck you, dude, you're a dick, I challenge you. We need to bring that back in a very legal, non-consequential manner. First blood, done. Like you bust the guy's nose, he's bleeding. All right, we're done. Or you decide on the terms. You'd be like, no, dude, I want this guy on the ground. Like I want a knockout, you know? And I think that's a very important thing, because right now you have this me, you know, on Facebook, and I see it all the time, and it's like getting worse, or I'm just elevating my shit basically to where I'm looking back and I'm like, there's guys actually arguing about, you know, I don't know, like dumb stuff. Like, what kind of pipe cleaners to use? Oh no, you can't use the bristled ones because these are better. And I heard this, and I was like, you're actually arguing about this? That's a silly thing to argue about. Or even worse, you take it to a political level and people are like, you know, Trump this, Biden this. It's like, they both hate you. Like they don't care. They don't have, none of these guys have any of your best interests in mind. That's the whole point of government. It's power. It's just with a different name. Instead of, you know, the monarchy, it's government. And we're fighting amongst each other for scraps. And that goes back to the whole thing with the aggression, is that like guys are, our place in the world has been slowly evaporating for the past like 200 years. We're not allowed to do the things that we innately need to do. Like I remember the days like in, you know, middle school, and like someone would call someone a poopy face and he'd get his ass knocked to the ground or whatever. You know, insert whatever phrase you want. He'd get his ass knocked to the ground and it was done. They got a little bit scolded. They went home. Maybe the next day they were playing basketball together instead of someone getting picked on and picked on and picked on. And then he brings a gun to school and shoots up the whole school. And it affects countless millions of people's rights in that regard. And not to mention all the poor kids and the families and all kind of shit. Like, don't suppress. Well, this is the thing. I'll tie it in. Jordan Peterson has a chapter called Don't Bother Your Kid When They're Skateboarding. Don't suppress that. You know, don't suppress that ability to express yourself in any way with your kids. If your kid wants to take a Sharpie and draw all over their arm, it's like, guess what? The kid's going to go to school with a Sharpie on his arm tomorrow. Who cares? If that kid wants to like go outside and he, you know, he gets a little pissed off and he wants to like, I don't know, hit something with a bat, that's not going to be really a big deal, or hit a tree with a bat, let him do it. Let him take out that emotion. It's healthy. It's going to make him feel better. I don't know. There's a lot I could go into here.
Well, I'll say one more thing, because I know we're getting the signal here from Sean. But you know, for me, I think there's a lot of merit to what you said. I don't know if I would go as far as to say we need to have duels.
I don't mean deadly.
Yeah, like that. But definitely grown laser men tag. Being able to push up against each other physically, right? Like, yeah. When was the last? I love asking this to guys. When was the last time that you had a full on wrestling match with another person? You know, once we become strong, well, I mean, because this, listen, right? Once we become strong enough to actually do some damage, then now we're a threat. Now it's dangerous, right? We're so afraid of making men violent again. The reality is that nature itself is violent, right? We've distanced ourselves from the reality of nature, but that's why some of those Instagram accounts I follow are like nature is metal, the ones that show like the deer getting its head ripped off.
We just talked about it.
Because it's so real, and we've created a society that it's insulated from the natural violence that exists in nature. And again, we're not that far removed. This whole idea of civilization, even if we want to say civilization is 10,000 years old, which is, you know, arguable, we're talking about humans as they existed now for hundreds of thousands of years. So small on the timeline, right? There was a time in which you had to carry around a club with you because something was going to try to kill you and take everything from you in every single moment. And that still exists in us. I'm not saying that we need to have battles to the death anymore, because that's also not healthy. I don't want to see a world. Here's the thing. I don't want to raise my kids in a world where they have to fight to the death for any reason.
No.
But I also want my kids to be fully expressed, so they're not containing them. You know, the stress and the anxiety that builds up in you when you're not articulating that, or it comes out in these passive aggressive ways that is ineffective in conversation and leads to this whole other bigger construct that we're a part of. So I'm a huge advocate for that, man. You know, being able to experience, because it's exhilarating. It makes you feel alive again. You start to feel that sense of competition, like your blood comes online. It snaps a man out of depression faster than anything else I've ever seen before. Cause like, oh, that's who I am. We remember who we are. You know, yeah. I think more of us need that.
So I think what we can all learn from this and maybe have some homework for the week is during your next pipe, when you're just sitting back and relaxing and having your drink and your pipe and your tobacco and whatever your ritual is, maybe have an honest conversation with yourself, you know, really dig deep. What do you truly want? Put all the things aside, what you think society thinks you should have, what you think your spouse wants you to have, what your parents want you to have or do or whatever. Have an honest conversation with yourself about what you truly want, and then figure out a plan to make that an integrated part of your life. And then once you've done that, maybe invite somebody else to share that with you, or at least open up the conversation to figure out, hey, my buddy's here. What does he actually want? Is there something I can help with him to actually accomplish the thing that I just did, because it's a good thing?
Yeah.
There always will be a trade-off. Like that's a big thing that started happening with me. Like, what am I willing to give up to get the things that I don't currently have that I want? And there will be something you may need to trade out. Like, you know, maybe I eat a donut, you know, every Sunday morning. Well, guess what? You're not eating that donut now. You're going for a 5-mile run. You're going to give up the donut. Or, you know, for me lately, it's been, I've been bad this week just because it's been a stressful week, but I try to eat no carbs for dinner, or very, very low carb for dinner. I eat super high carb for breakfast and like a regular lunch. And that's been helping quite a bit, but I had to give up. Like, I like French fries when I have a burger. You know, I like, you know, hash browns and that kind of stuff. I'm, you know, doing breakfast for dinner. But anyway, Jetty, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I think bringing back that asking yourself, you know, for the sake of what, you know, before, you know, you load up your pipe, you do everything, your setup, whatever that's like, get in your favorite chair, and then ask yourself, you know, why am I doing this? Because there are those things about ritual that it's easy to forget, even if it's like a ritual of prayer or a ritual of gratitude. You know, I've got those rituals myself. And sometimes I get so in the routine of doing my rituals that I could forget why. And I had a teacher one time that just said, you know, the simplest question you can ask yourself that's the most profound is, why am I doing this? For the sake of what? For the sake of what am I lighting up this pipe? I had a very unhealthy relationship with tobacco for many years, on and off. For me, it was mostly rolling cigarettes, rolling tobacco. And almost every single time it was, I was doing it to escape something else, right? I had that relationship where I was trying to escape the deeper thing I didn't want to face, the challenge I was having at work, the argument I just had with my wife, the thoughts I have about being inadequate, and I could just escape it by rolling up a smoke and then lighting it up. And when I started to really ask myself, well, for the sake of what? And I was honest, I was like, oh, I'm avoiding something. And even if that's the truth, maybe that's just a good start. Maybe you still, you know, still light up the pipe, but at least you're being more honest with yourself. And I would say that's the invitation, right? Is being more honest, because a lot of the things that we do in ritualistic ways are also escape patterns. You know, especially a lot of the substances and vices that we can have. I mean, social media, right? Scrolling on Instagram, going on YouTube, those are also escape rituals. So yeah. I think just checking in with why you're doing it is really important too.
And Jetty's not telling you not to smoke pipes, guys.
No, it's just, no.
It's an exercise in mindfulness. Personally, like, I'll have a pipe when I need to think about something, when I need to relax, and it actually is healthier for me than the other things that I would do. You know, like sitting in front of your phone for, you know, 2 hours scrolling through TikTok may not be the healthiest thing for you. We mentioned in another episode, with One Big Pikey about the Oculus. I got an Oculus and I was just like, this is really, really unhealthy stuff. Mm-hmm. And I made the decision to return it like a day after I got it. So I was like, nope, we're not going to go down that path. Mm-hmm. And that was hard for me because I love technology and I love all that crazy shit. I love shock and awe. And, I've gotten into a point of, and you guys can look this up, of low time preference. You know, don't look at the now, like, be present, obviously, but the low time preference theory is basically like you're putting in work and effort now so that you'll be in a different place tomorrow. And it helps you actually even let go of the past in a lot of ways, because you realize that your transformation has nothing to do with your past. Like, you've made a decision presently and you're like, you know what? I'm not going to do that anymore. And it takes all those things that are currently harming you, distracting you, maybe making you not the best person you can be, and just putting those in the past. You don't have to worry about them anymore. So anyway, just tie that in.
Jetty, thank you so much for being on the podcast, man. If we wanted to share with others where to find you or the Rising Man podcast or movement, where can we find you?
Yeah, well, risingman.org is a good map for everything that we got going on. You can certainly find out information about the podcast there. The Rising Man podcast is on every platform where you would listen to podcasts, so you can also search that. If anyone is on Instagram, you can go follow us on Instagram at Rising Man Movement. Myself personally, I'm on Instagram at Jetty Azuma. And the thing that I would say is, The Monday episodes of the podcast, like you said before, are really digestible. You know, there's like 5 to 10 minute ones, and they take the conversation that we had today just a little bit deeper. And it's just an opportunity to be more curious and to look at yourself a little bit more. And I know not everybody's into that. Maybe you listen to this today and you're like, it's not really for me. But for anyone who is, just an invitation to look at yourself with a little more curiosity. So I'd really encourage people to go check those out.
That's awesome, man. Thank you so much for joining us. And it's been a real pleasure meeting you and hearing your point of view on all this.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. All right, guys. Well, that was an episode of Beyond the Pipe. If you have any questions, please email us at beyondthepipe1@gmail.com. It's beyondthepipe1@gmail.com.